What's going on, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of Knowing is Knowing. I'm your host, Rashad Young, and as always, I appreciate you guys tuning into a brand new episode today. I have Shalafa Victoria, who is a lawyer, who is an advocate, who does so many great things, a somatic healing coach. It was truly a great conversation to get to know her a little bit better. I learned about her background coming up in Ecuador and the work that she is doing, and the work that she is doing currently in New York. I think the coolest part about these episodes, man, are just meeting people all over the world and all doing fantastic things. And again, I think Shalafa is another prime example of somebody who is doing the work, not only with herself, but also for others, which I think is the most important thing. Her information and things you learn more about her will be in the episode description. Make sure to check out her page and all the great things she's doing. Shalafa, thank you again. It was a truly amazing conversation. I'm sure there'll be more to come. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Until next time, guys, peace.
Well, I appreciate you joining today. Super excited to connect with so many beautiful guests. What I like to do with this podcast really is to find ways to humanize people and their experiences. Obviously, you know about what people do for their career and stuff like that. We'll get into that in a second. But the first question I like to ask all of my guests is, who are you to the world?
Who am I to the world? I like to say that I am a human first, because in this world, a lot of us focus on doing and what we do, but I'm a human and I try to be a human being as much as I can. I'm a daughter, a granddaughter, a sister, an auntie. And outside of that, what I am to the world is, I would say, like a bridge and a friend.
And which one of those roles mean most to you?
I am such a family-oriented person, so the relations that I have with my family mean a lot to me. But I take friendship really seriously. It's, I think in my life, it is the highest form of love. And I take that role really seriously, and it relates to some of the wellness consultancy that I do. And it's kind of why I have this blended aspect to my services beyond the law.
Okay, so not, well, yeah, I think friendship is the highest form of love, definitely. So from a career aspect, what are some things that you do? What is it that you do?
So by trade, I'm a lawyer bartending in New York State. Right now I'm in the middle of a transition, actually. I began practicing law in the realm of international trade, which at the moment is super busy and exploding.
Yeah.
All the tariff changes and just keeping track of everything and supporting all the companies with basically, the chaos of changing tariffs. And what I'm pivoting to is something that I did during law school and that I've been doing less in the law but more in the activism space since I was really young, like since I was 20, 21, which is community economic development. It's being a lawyer in the law school that I studied at, in the clinic that deals with both housing justice as well as building an economic solidarity economy, rather a democratic solidarity economy in communities traditionally marginalized by the systems that, the powers that be.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very unique way. And so I'm curious to know, like, growing up, like, did you always know that you want to be a lawyer? Did you just kind of go into it? Did you take a class in college? Like, how do we get to that space? And then also with the community aspect of engagement and activism, like, what got you wanted to take that step as well?
Yeah. No, you know what? I actually, when I was little, my family had trouble with lawyers being responsible to the detriment of our immigration journey. We got deported from Canada. And so I kind of grew up with a resentment towards lawyers. And I had this cynical view, still do, of the law and its power to actually change the situations that we live on the everyday. What I wanted to be was a therapist. I had wanted to be a therapist because of just my own experience moving from, I was born and raised in Ecuador, and then I moved to Canada with my family on an asylum case. And then we got deported, like I said. And so, where, I ended up coming back home to Ecuador. But even though it was home, it still felt like home by blood. I felt foreign just because of the few years outside. So, all of those transitions made me just crave a sense of belonging and built a lot of empathy inside of me for just being the new kid over and over. And I had wanted to become a therapist because of that. But what ended up happening is I got an offer, like a call for applications for a pre-legal studies program. And my mom was next to me in the train when I got it. So I was reading my email, and my parents have never been the type to force me to do anything or push me. They were, come from modest means. They were happy with me just getting my associate's degree, right? And my mom was like, "You can work at a grocery store. Like, you've done more than any one of us." So she never really pushed me, but she knew that I had this, like, outside of being empathetic, I've just had like a compass for justice from what happened to us. Just like, basically, we had a situation also growing up in domestic violence. And so I've always been like against the patriarchy, even if I didn't have the language for it. So my mom said, kind of nudged me, and she said, "The law might give you the tools that, to advocate." And I was like, "I don't want to be a lawyer." But I've always had this respect for my mom. Even if I don't listen to her directly, I still consider her opinion. And just who I am is because of my just like an intuitive reverence to the elderly and like people that came before me. So yeah, I applied because of that. She didn't like, she didn't force me. She didn't put a gun to my head and say, "You should go to law school." But I did apply because I thought, like, she's older than me, she might know better. And then I got accepted into that program, which was a pipeline program that enabled students from diverse backgrounds to access law school and the preparation that goes into the and like a law school entry. So that's how I ended up there, and I kind of dragged my feet throughout the whole experience. I'm kind of a reluctant lawyer, and a lot of people that are close to me know that about me. But it's not far. Like, I do appreciate the role it places me in society. Like, it is a practical tool. Ultimately, it carries a lot of power. And like, for like a little Ecuadorian girl that has grown up between worlds, like, I think that's a really cool thing to have in the back of my toolkit. And it is kind of, yeah, now I'm glad I did it. I'm really glad I did it because it relates to a lot of the change that I do want to see. And directly or indirectly, it allows me to do the work that yeah, just the work that in my view moves the needle for the world. But yeah, that's how I ended up. And then the community aspect is because again, the sense of home, the sense of belonging has always been something that I'm like churning over in my mind. And as soon as I could get an internship, like junior year of university, one of my professors put me in touch with an organization in Harlem. I'm based in New York. And the organization in Harlem dealt with campaigns against gentrification of that neighborhood, which was primarily Black and Latino. So I started canvassing and like door knocking and phone banking and doing the work, the organizing work. It had been something that was the first time I did it. I didn't know it existed. And when I had that internship, I thought, why aren't more people doing this? Like, this is the work that pushes lawyers, pushes legislators, pushes change. So I took it really seriously, and I wanted to bring it over to Queens, which is where I was based back then. And I joined a tenants union, the Richwood Tenants Union. And ever since, I've been involved because I truly believe that, all change happens ground up, and it's important to participate. And that tenants union, we focus on campaigns anti eviction of tenants, primarily immigrant communities, people that have been there for many years. And it all ties into a community economic development, because housing and business, right, access to small business, all of those things combined is what makes the social infrastructure in a community. So that's what our school clinic does, and that's where I'll be pivoting in literally 2 weeks.
Oh man, that's cool. That is quite a pivot. So funny enough, I'm actually finishing school to be a therapist. So it's always kind of funny to see that shift of like the different routes that people can take. And kind of similar to you, it wasn't something that I was reluctant to do at first. My mom always saw me be at one. She's like, "Yeah, you're very much a therapist or a counselor." I'm like, "Mama, I don't see it." But working in schools, working with people, and just having just a natural ability to listen to people really well and kind of help and guide them, I was like, maybe I should take this route. And that's the cool part about it. So I think the work is needed, but also just hearing you talk about the things that you're sharing and passionate about, I think you ended up picking a route that made most sense to you. Because it does, it has to kind of does have to make sense. Like, I've seen therapists be community activists, but in a different way. The power of a lawyer is a little bit substantial. I feel like when you think of a lawyer, you just think of somebody who just means business and they know all these different things. So I think that's the great thing. So I'm always curious about the city of New York, the state of New York, because there's so many different places, boroughs, size, something I think that's it's always really cool to hear about. So I guess from a housing standpoint, because I feel like everything is stacked up in New York. I feel like there's a house on top of a house there. What are some, I guess, inequities that often do happen in the state or city of New York that most people don't know about? Outside of the cost, like I know that's one thing. Like New York's expensive. Like, is there a housing issue in New York? Is it too many people? I'm always just curious about that type of stuff.
Well, the reality is that there is a housing issue in the world. There's evictions happening all the time everywhere in the world, and the housing crisis has gotten really bad lately. Like, I think that's like the main crisis in the century, other than like climate change as well. But the issues here, yeah, absolutely, there's a housing crisis, as like again nationwide as well. I mean, it's hard to say what most people wouldn't know, but I'll tell you what I came to New York when I was 17. So I can tell you what I kind of realized when when I got here that I didn't know before. So, I saw New York being like shiny lights, tall skyscrapers, Broadway shows, and art, and all of these things. And when I started to canvas and phone bank and do community work in Harlem, I am very friendly by nature. And so I had many conversations with the people that have lived there. And many of these folks that I was speaking with had been there for like 30 plus years. And they knew the neighbors, they knew each other. They knew that block. They knew what happened in that block. They, at some point in the afternoon, they brought their plastic chairs out. It was summer, so they would have the spread. Like the elderly would watch the kids play in the sprinklers, the fire hydrants. They'll open that, and then it'll just splash the water out. And I mean, I think that I wish I'd known. But it was a good time. I mean, I was still pretty young. I was 19, I think. Yeah, I had realized like, oh my God, like New York is not like a transient city. Like a lot of people that come here, especially for school, there's, people come for a few years, they get their job, and then they leave or they stay, but they kind of build their life in this like artificial, like I don't want to say artificial, like new the thing is people make of New York whatever they want. But I think what most people don't realize is that there is a very lovely social fabric already in New York. And oftentimes, like the people that, like me, that come, and other people that come from out of state, they're entering a community. It's not like they are, you know what I mean? And with that comes the gentrification issue, that's a rampant issue. Where a lot of these communities that I'm speaking about, they get disrupted and the rent prices go up because landlords are motivated to build fancier buildings for the newcomers. There's a market for it for sure. Like it's a huge market. So the newcomers will come, they'll be able to rent, I don't know, like say, I don't know, $4,000 for a 3-bedroom or something like that. And they'll split it in like three roommates that all come from out of state, all of them can afford a $16,000 rent per person type of thing, right? And so that, but you don't realize that that building actually displaced maybe two smaller buildings where these like older generations lived in. Probably rent controlled, probably with subsidies, right? That allowed them to stay there year after year. But then the landlords are motivated by the profit, and so they'll expel those people out through eviction process, and then they'll just get the permits. The city rewards progress, literally. Like if you just present that you have a construction project that signifies progress, then you basically have the permit to build. And then the community gets disrupted. So I don't know if people don't know that, but that's something that was shocking to me when I moved, right? Because I come from Ecuador, small city, small town. I know, like, you know, my grandma, like I grew up with my grandma. My grandma knows the people on the street, on the block, right? Like, I just felt that tightness, and I didn't know that that happened here as well in the city. Like, you don't even have to go in the suburbs to feel that, right? In the city. So yeah, I mean, and then in a more general way, yeah, it's crowded, I would say. In the summer it smells bad because the garbage bags are just like out on the floor, like on the sidewalk, and it's super humid. New York gets super humid July and August. It's something that I don't love. And I thought, oh, that's maybe why they call it the concrete jungle, because it is so humid at like a rainforest would be. So that's another thing. And yeah, I don't know if that answered your question, but that's something that I
No,
definitely,
it does.
yeah, didn't
It
know
does.
myself.
I mean, it's a lot of routes. I mean, again, it's always when you're on the outside in, I just think even just being a tourist in America, like a lot of people haven't got a chance to explore New York. So when you hear about these stories sometimes, especially from a housing standpoint, you're just kind of like all these houses are stacked up and you wonder like people who've been there for a long period of time, like how does that work when gentrification comes in? So I'm always curious about that, like for people who actually live there for a long period of time. I wanted to transition for a bit, because you mentioned just, growing up from Ecuador and living with your grandmother. What is something that she taught you that you still live with to this day? Like what advice, like lesson, something like that?
So she's still alive. She's 89 or turning 89 in like 2 weeks. As I'm transitioning into my job, it's also her birthday. Oh, my grandma. The thing that I associate her with the most is her garden, her flowers. Loved her garden, loved her flowers. And the main thing, okay, actually, two things. To talk to plants, that was one. And then two, to use the eggshells from the boiled eggs in the morning. You crack them and then you use it to feed the plants. You basically just put it in the earth and that's decomposed. So those two things, and they're representative because I am someone who, again, holds big reverence toward elderly, but also nature. And that's sort of a related area of work that I focus on. And it is because of her. It's because of her inspiration. I don't know if you can see like my plant back
I
here,
see it.
there. And I have a whole wall of plants next to me. You can't see. I would turn the camera to show you, but yeah. So that's I guess my love for the natural world and the fact that, you know, I was so little when she would tell me, like, you talk to your plants because they're living beings. They're non-human, but it's life nonetheless. So that's something that I have from her. I don't know if she could, you know, I don't know that she would give herself credit for it. But that's when I think of her, that's sort of what she inspired in me.
Yeah, no, I think that's beautiful. I didn't know anything about the eggshell thing. I've heard about talking to plants. And at first, until I really understood it, I'm like, we're talking to things, but I do think that words give energy, and if you speak life into it, it'll continue. So I get it. Not
Absolutely.
knowing too much about it, I'm just kind of like, okay, this is
Yeah.
different, but it makes sense. It's cool.
Yeah. No, it's influenced a lot. And in fact, I just before your call, I was unboxing a new book I got, literally called Earth Law, because that's something that I'm exploring, just the legality of protecting Earth and changing our views of society in relation to Earth. All of it because of grandma.
Yeah, I mean, grandma has the best advice typically. Are you an avid reader?
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay, well, I gotta ask Evergreens my their top 3 to 5 books.
Top 3 to 5 books right now, off the top of my
Or just in general, just like
okay.
whatever like you truly enjoy, like.
Yeah, I mean, so off the top of my head, the ones that are coming out that I would recommend or that I recommend to my friends, The Four Agreements by Miguel Ruiz. You know, that's a good book. I'm probably overdue to read it, reread it. I would say The Alchemist. I love that book.
Okay, this is getting scary. We got two of mine in the top five. All right, that's
Yeah.
good. Okay.
I love The Alchemist. I would recommend, this is less of like a, so The Alchemist is more fiction and a lot of like personal stuff, but there's this book by Brené Brown, The Atlas of the Heart. My sister gave it to me for Christmas. I haven't sat and read it cover to cover, but I pick it up whenever I just need, I don't know, just like understand myself better. You know, I'm always trying to feel better and also learn to feel more, you know, and so I think I would pick that up. And then a fourth one, I don't know. Oh, there's this book that I loved, that I recommend to people that are interested in belonging and like, you know, just appreciating the world and nature. It's called Belonging by Toko Pa.
Yep.
Yeah, you know that too.
I do.
Oh,
Yeah.
that's crazy. Those are the four books. I wonder if there's another, you know, another one that I would recommend that I think on the same line, Healing Justice. Yeah, Healing Justice is a new book that came out. The name of the author is escaping me, but it's a new book, came out 2024.
I think I heard of it. Yeah, the author's escaping me too. So no, Four Agreements and The Alchemist are my top two. I think everybody should read the Four Agreements at least once a year. At
Yeah,
least.
I
At
know.
least.
Literally, I was just looking at it. I have it up there.
Yeah, I think I see
Yeah,
it.
yesterday, and I was like, I'm overdue for it for a reread.
Yeah.
Oh, and a fifth book that I really love that I think is really important. It's called The Course on Love by a philosopher called Alain de Botton. I think he's Swiss slash English or something like that. He runs the
Okay.
School of Life. I don't know if you know the
Yeah, the
School of Life.
YouTube channel.
Yeah. So Alain de Botton. So The Course on Love is a really good book.
Is it about the course of love? I'm curious.
So it's funny, right? Because it's like a course, like a class, or like the course of love. It's a story. It's lessons on love, the reality of it, right? Because he's all about the fact that like nothing about love is romantic, quote unquote, except for the beginning and the meeting part, right? And
I
so
agree.
what he does in this book, yeah, what he does in this book is show you what love looks like in praxis through a story of a couple in their meeting time, when they start living together, when they get married, when they have kids, when they just start having problems. And so it's the course of love, as in like the journey of it, but also
Yeah.
the lessons embedded, both in the characters and in his own voice that reflects at the end of each chapter. It's like a teaching, like a curriculum per se. So I recommend it.
Yeah, and I'm intrigued because I try to tell my clients when I talk to them, like, when you meet somebody, that first maybe year maybe the stretch, it's like the honeymoon stage. Yeah, it's going to be excitement, and then at some point they're like, "Well, I lost that feeling." I said, "Well, yes, because the excitement has shifted a little bit. Maybe the next excitement is you guys moving into a house together or getting married or having kids, but that first interaction will never be the same." You can try your best to get that spark back, but it will never come back the same way. Because I'm a firm believer that I think love is an action more than a feeling. And it used to be a lot of arguments I used to have with people, but I'm like, but explain that to me. Like, how can you feel something for someone for that long? Because they're also on the other end too. They can make you mad. They can disappoint you. They can make you upset. That feeling of intensity that you once had is going to go away. Like, it's impossible. And you know how much you love somebody in the absence of that intensity of the feeling. Like if you guys get into it, Are you still kind to them? You still give them their favorite meal, like those type of things. I think that shows up a lot more than just the intensity of that first day. I'm gonna have to get that book. Now I'm excited.
Yeah,
I'm gonna
no,
try
it's a good book. I
and read.
recommend it. Yeah, I should probably reread it. The last time I read it was 2 years ago. Yeah, good book. I recommend it. Easy read. And I agree. I mean, I think that when I what I tell myself is it's never the person, it's always the feeling. As in, like I am responsible to find that spark. Like I think people are just mirrors and data on where we are at. And it's on us to kind of take the mindful action toward building that connection over and over as many times as you need. So I
100%.
resonate
100%.
said.
It's a hard conversation to have though. And I was just talking to somebody about that. I was like, so many people are used to extremes, in a sense of, again, going back to the intensity, like the intensity of a connection, where, again, you first meet somebody, there's this intensity and they don't match the intensity based off of certain systems that you're used to. You don't feel like there's anything there. So like if somebody is and I hate using like attachment styles as the example, but that's just what people, that's where we're at today's time where everybody talks about attachment styles. But if you're so used to feeling a consistency of reassurance through text messaging, people texting each other, and somebody you meet somebody new and they don't do it the same way, it doesn't make them less of an adequate partner for you. Maybe their style's a little bit different. But if you're only used to that extreme, you're gonna gauge that based off of that. And that's
Yeah.
a little unhealthy. It's a little
Yeah.
unhealthy.
Honestly, that's so funny you say that because I was just writing on this yesterday. Very raw thoughts, but yeah, I was writing on this yesterday because I was basically from experience, right? Like everything I do and everything I talk about from experience. But I was one of those people that felt safe in a connection where there was a dialogue, a consistent dialogue, not only, a dialogue, but like consistent dialogue. And I felt emotional connection just through words, like phone calls, text messages. And something that's, and of course, like within that framework that you use, the attachment styles, I would place myself more in like a like the anxious attachment
Anxious, yeah.
towards secure, right? And I've done so much work with it that I'm at a point in life where my nervous system has the capacity to hold space for different connections. And that's something I believe in. The somatic practice that I do, EFT tapping, has helped huge amounts in moving that needle towards just not feeling any sort of triggers around it, which has allowed me to embrace different ways of connecting. And so something that's been new is just connecting through energy, just like the energy in between, right? Like in between the text messages, the tension in between, right? It's healthy, still very much reassuring. It's just a different style and it actually feels more intimate at times. And it requires comfort within my own body to kind of hold space for that tension that is just like visceral rather than like, communication through words, you know what I mean? It's a
For
different
sure.
sort of energy because communicating through words also requires energy. But yeah, just feeling into someone and just that emotional attunement, it's been interesting. And I wasn't able to do that, back then when I was just learning to kind of walk the nerve, the what is it, the anxious attachment style sort of paradigm. But yeah, it's interesting. It makes me curious too about, what other connections can I form through like this embodiment, right? Rather than
Yeah.
like that validation through words. Yeah. So just holding space for both.
I'm always a believer though that at the core, we're gonna always look for validation through words. A lot of times we didn't get it relatively young, and it could be from I mean, at first it's always gonna start in childhood. So a lot of people, at least that I talk to or connect with, they didn't really get that I love you, I'm proud of you. So, naturally, you're always going to try to make sure that you're getting the approval from your family members, your friends, grandma, grandpa. Then it goes to school where you're trying to get, validation from your teachers. You play sports, it's coaches. teammates. So like in our nature, we're driven to want to feel accepted. Problem is that we don't really get the chance to experience it in a healthy way. A lot of us growing up, then they go to people like me, they have to unlearn all those things. And we have to kind of unpack it together, including myself. Like, yeah, I think sometimes people think, well, you work in that space of helping people, you don't have problems. I'm like, I probably have the biggest problems, and also have to hold myself to a higher standard because I'm helping you out. So I gotta be able to practice what I preach. And so, yeah, I think naturally most people are anxious, or they eventually switch over to an avoidant, where they avoid conflict, they avoid those dialogues, or they push people away, which is like my new favorite thing of noticing people do. And in my experience, it's like, the closeness is too close where they feel threatened by it. Although they may not want to do it, they have to push you away in order to feel some sense of security. And because for some odd reason, people feel weird enough to depend on another person. And that's kind of the whole point of a relationship or a friendship, right? Just like you there is some sort of dependency, or just a hope that, this connection, you want to create that sense of dependency where it's like, well, if I need you, you will be there. I always say, if you're not going to have that idea, you probably shouldn't be in a relationship if you don't feel like you should depend on anybody. That's why I don't like the conversation typically about on both sides. I try to say both sides, but like the I don't need a man or I don't need a woman conversation. Because it's relatively unhealthy. And then my argument is, for those people who have that ideology, why are you on dating apps then? What is the point of getting on dating apps or making comments of wanting something? Because at the end of the day, we all have a desire of that human connection. That's an absurd statement to make when our internal dialogue is craving for something. It's usually a person to share those experiences with. So it's always funny when I have those conversations. But we could talk about this for like 50 hours.
I
We
know.
could have this something I'm really passionate about. You
No,
about to
I
say
have
something?
to. Yeah, the only thing I didn't really quite agree on is I don't think that people generally go from an anxious to avoidant per se in like a linear way. I think it depends on the person too, right? Like
Oh,
on the
sure.
other person. I feel like I have had times where I fluctuate from like having a lot of triggers that put me in like the anxious realm, but then like just depending on the other person, if they have a lot of more anxieties, then they'll put me in the avoidant realm, right? And so I think it's just sort of just knowing what center looks like, knowing what balance looks like, and trying to come back to that. But yes, everything else, I totally agree. This is like a deep topic, and the narratives can become contradicting at times, for sure.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's obviously not linear, but it does, like you mentioned, it does depend on that. The next connection or something with somebody where you're like, oh, I thought I was anxious, and I meet this person, I don't even want to, I can't even compare. So that makes sense. You mentioned balance. What does that mean for you? What does balance look like for you in your life?
Balance. I think in my life, the first thing that comes to mind is balance of energies. Something I've been training on recently is knowing when to tap into that more driven, solar sort of like sun driven, right? Like yang energy. Kind of like the forward moving, the needle mover, the infrastructure, the building, the practical, and the more receptive, sort of intuitive, creative, restful sort of energy, more lunar, right? I think for the majority of my life, I've been on survival mode, as I'm sure many are. And I think that because of that, especially coming to this country and trying to figure out not only the education, but the culture, the economy, just trying to make it, quote unquote, not just myself, but also my mom and my grandma, she's also here. And so just having that on, like feeling the weight of that has put me in a very ambitious, driven mode. But I've gotten to know burnout really well through that as well. And as someone who is quite spiritual, I've been spiritual since I was like 12, just like consciously. I think it doesn't sit well for my soul to always be in that spiral. And so balance has looked like, kind of learning, unlearning, learning and unlearning the time where I get to push, and then the time where I get to sit back, and hearing my body. And somatic practice has been really important, just to know, is my body communicating? It's expressing, it's saying I can't, right? So yeah, I would say balance looks like a balance of energies, the doing versus the being, and how to harmonize those, especially, in reaching the career goals that I've reached, and I'm trying to do the wellness service consultancy on the side, and all of it has been building together. And so knowing, and the law generally requires a lot of pushing, right? Pushing, billing hours, all of that stuff. Whereas the other practice requires receptiveness and intuition and creativity and letting people come, right? So managing my, I guess you could call it masculine and feminine energies, that's been the big theme recently for me. I mean, for a while now. And then I guess the other way, balance. I mean, I'm a Libra sun. So Libra suns are, justice, the literally the balanced. So I think I'm seeking harmony in most of my life realms. Just,
Okay, so you're in the zodiac signs too. I see.
yeah, even yes, I am. Yeah,
Okay,
and
so Libra
here
sun, I'm trying to see. Does that mean you're a Libra? I'm still learning about the sun, moon. Okay. Okay. Okay, so you're Libra sun. I'm a Pisces. Okay, that's a good. Okay, so I'm learning. I'm learning. I'm still figuring out all these different. I learned about the houses and all these different.
Yeah, it's
Your guy
expensive.
gave me.
Yeah, it's expensive.
No, I think those are all great points that you mentioned. Find that balance and duality and things is always an interesting thing to do. It also can be relatively tough, especially with such a career field that you were in, which was being a lawyer. So you said bar pending. So that means you took the bar already, or you're waiting on results, or you're about to take the bar.
No, luckily I passed.
Congrats.
Luckily I passed. I am waiting to get admitted. So I'm waiting to get sworn in. So I
Okay.
can get like my piece of paper that has my name and says I practice law in the state of New York. So whenever I say lawyer, I have to say bar pending, because like right now I work under the supervision of fully licensed attorneys. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, congratulations to you.
Thank you.
I know that's that test is no joke.
Well, you don't have to tell me. A big part of why I've chosen the path, like the wellness path I have chosen in such a vocal way, whereas before maybe I would heal or work on myself behind closed doors, and I've chosen to kind of step out and like put myself as a resource for others, is because of the bar. Like, it was a huge challenge. I had to take it 3 times. So after the third
Wow.
time, I passed. Yeah. And I'm very proud of it. I know in the profession, it's a big stigma. And yeah, I'm very proud of it. There's so much that I've learned from it, and so many others that just, suffer in silence, because it's such a excruciating experience to fail not only once, but twice. So yeah, it's a hard test for sure.
Well, congratulations to you to have that persistence. I have been told by people that there's a stigma behind the failing aspect, and I'm always intrigued by that because, there's different factors why somebody may not do well that day. It could have just been a bad day. Test anxiety, it's all those different things. And I just know the pressures also to pass that test is probably relatively high because of all the hard work you all have done to get to that point. So no,
Yeah.
congratulations to you. Seriously, I'll never judge anybody for taking a test 3, 4, 5, 6 times because you could have gave up after the first one. So no, that's good.
Yeah, and if I had to take it 10 times, I would have taken it 10 times, I think.
That's persistent. That's good. I think that's a strength. That means you just have the ability to adjust as things go on. I mean, I think that's beautiful. So my final question for you that I like to ask all my guests is what does it mean to be human to you? You kind of mentioned it earlier, but I'm always curious, like to wrap it up, like what does it mean to be a human to you?
I think two things. To be human means to feel alive, which entails to feel fully, right? To feel fully the ups and the downs and to embrace your strengths, your edges, all of it. And it's uncomfortable, but I think that path to wholeness is kind of a, I don't know, I see it as a responsibility of just this for the sake of being human. Like you're here to feel alive, and the only way you truly feel alive is by wholehearted living and just like becoming whole, which again entails the good and the bad. And a lot of us, including myself, for a while, or because you're in the rat race, we numb, but then in numbing, you're also numbing to the juiciness of life, you know, the beautiful moments, the magic. So that's on one hand. And on the other hand, to be human is to be of service and relate to others. Absolutely. Like, I think I'm, you know, all about personal development, personal growth. But if it's not tied to service and to how you relate to others, including your inner child, you know, sometimes we're like the meanest to the people inside of us that, you know, live in a memory of abandonment and all these wounds from the past and traumatic events, right? So how to relate to ourselves, how to relate to others, and most importantly, how to relate to Earth. I think that is a social responsibility that we all have. Like, not because we're passionate, not because I'm passionate about community, not because, no, I think it's a social responsibility just for the sake of being human that I get to, as I make my decisions for my own world, I challenge myself to consider, because it's so easy to, as a human being in this world, to commodify everything and just kind of like, you know, hit your milestones and focus on your family and all of these things. And it, I challenge myself to never forget the community around me. You know, I could have moved out of the neighborhood I live in and gone to a whole different neighborhood, but I challenged myself to stay close because I wanted to be close to that tenants union that I mentioned to you. You know, and so I
Right.
and that's like that's a choice. Like, I know not you can choose to do anything. You know, you have free will. And so I think, yeah, but I don't think that to be human is to just be an individual in a world. I think to be human is to, one, be of service, and two, relate to others, to force yourself to. Yeah, and then outside of us in the internal world is to feel, just to feel alive, to do anything you can to feel the juiciness
Yeah.
of life.
That was such an amazing answer. That was good. That's one of my favorite ones or I'm always curious to hear what other people say, but no, I think that's all that's really important. But especially when you mentioned service, I think that's to me that's my driving force. I tell people that's literally why we're designed to be here as human beings. We are literally here to do acts of service, regardless what industry we do or who we connect with. Like that is the overarching theme of our lives. So no, I appreciate that answer and I appreciate you taking the time to join. This has been such a great conversation. Always feeling to have conversations and similarities on topics and things I like to enjoy. So I never know what I get into when I have these conversations. So I appreciate you.
Yeah, kind of ominous. But I'm glad it worked out, and yeah, it was lovely to talk to you as well.
Of course, where can people find you on social media?
I'm on Instagram, sue.lalala. And TikTok, same thing, but I'm more active on Instagram.
Like that. Nice. A good user. That's
Yeah.
cool. What well, I
I'm trying
appreciate you.
to jump to TikTok, but it's hard. It's too
TikTok,
stimulating.
you just
TikTok
gotta
is
do
way
what
too
works.
stimulating.
Yeah, it's a lot going on. But no,
A
I
lot.
seriously though, I really do appreciate you taking the time. But also listen, make sure to subscribe to this on your favorite audio platform. Check me out on YouTube. Make sure to check out her wonderful information, which will be in the episode description. It's been an episode of Knowing is Knowing. I appreciate you guys. Until next time. Peace.